Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for Lickin' On Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Lickin' On Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Lickin' On Lending, David Lickin.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. It is Monday, August 29th. I've survived my birthday. I flipped it over another calendar. I've had 72 trips around the sun. I'm so glad to be here with you all. And I'm amongst a couple older guys. We got Mark Helm, who's here. He's about 30 days older than I am. So much fun. And then we've got a much younger Jack Nennery, who our co-host here. We got Kittle and David Kittle. We've got Alice Alvey, who's been here since the beginning of the podcast way back. So we're glad to have our team of professionals talking about everything going on in the mortgage world. So much happening to hear about it. But this is Monday, August 29th, and we're so grateful to have you here. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime, anywhere. Hey, I got to give a shout out for Podtize. That's who we are now using on our podcast to support our podcast and get the word out. And they're just really getting us started. We're now back up in the Apple Store. It's crazy with the success that happens with that. We are advertising. We are reaching near over 3,000 downloads of our podcast per day. It is insane. It's going just up and up. So it's so good to have you joining us. Tell others about it. It's all word of mouth. And we're thrilled to have you here as a part of the podcast. I want to say thank you to our sponsors, Fidastra. Their Fusion Mortgage Bot solution personalizes the path to a borrower-specified information, making that we can join with any device at any point in time. Start with your iPhone. Go to your computer. Go to your iPad. Go to wherever you want to go and get connected. So it's so good to have you here with us. By the way, those of you listeners that are listening, I mean, those of you regulars that are dialed in and listening, I'm hearing a lot of background noise. So if you would mute yourself until it comes up to your segment or you want to contribute, that would be awesome because I'm hearing a lot of clicking, banging, or something. So someone is out there doing that, and we need to have you mute out on your end. Anyway. Also, form free, an automatic check. They have an account check that can be used to satisfy Freddie Mac's re-verification. Check out what form free is doing. We had Christy Moss on. Love Christy Moss. She is a social media magnet. She is like a one-man PR band. She is just amazing. Anyway, check out that interview we did on June 20th. Also, Lender Toolkit. They do an awesome job with some great technology. Very pleased to have them as a sponsor, as well as SnapDocs. They work backwards from the future. They work backward, working backward from the future. I love that. Where they're helping every closing in a flawless, create a flawless experience. Their aim is to completely eradicate errors. I kind of think that's a good objective, the great goal, their aim. But, man, that's a daunting one. But they've got a plan to do it. Check out snapdocs.com. Then also Total Expert, they absolutely unify the data experience through sales and marketing and compliance solutions. They bring a cohesive experience across the customer lifecycle. Here's the best part. It's a very, very good CRM. It is the best out there. And I encourage you to check out Total Expert. The leaders are using it. You need to use it as well. Then there's Simple Nexus. We love what Simple Nexus is doing. These companies are all some of the leaders in the industry, and we're thrilled to have them as diamond sponsors. We also have some coming on. We've got, I'm really excited about Candor joining that list of companies, but we also have the Mortgage Bankers Association. We have Lenders One. We have the Mortgage Collaborative. We have Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, Modex, the Mortgage Advisory Tools, and then DW Consulting. And again, the list is growing each and every week. But each and every week, we have Adam DeSantis here of the MBA. We have Wes Parker. We got Matt Graham. We've got David Kittle, new to the show, as well as Alice Alvey, who's been here since the beginning of time with me. Beginning of the podcast as well. That doesn't mean she's old. No. She's not old. She's been here since the beginning. Alan Pollack is joining us in with an update on the technology world. And Mark Helm is also joining us talking about loan servicing. And that came at the suggestion of our co-host, Jack Nunnery. Good to have you all here. We're excited about what's going on. Let's run over to the Adam DeSantis and the update from the MBA with the MBA Mortgage Minute. Too many M's trying to come out of my mouth at the same time and talking too fast. Here it is. Adam DeSantis, what you got for us?
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, FHFA announced its intent to establish a federal advisory committee on affordable, equitable, and sustainable housing. The committee's purpose is to provide information, analysis, and recommendations to FHFA on these matters. The committee will not set policy or make decisions, nor will they have access to non-public FHFA information. The committee will consist of approximately 20 members serving two-year terms who have relevant housing experience. FHFA will solicit nominations and applications for membership and a subsequent notice. And finally, now is the time to register for MBA's 2022 annual convention, taking place on October 23rd through the 26th in Nashville, Tennessee. For more information and to register, visit mba.org/annual. Now that's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Love the MBA. Love what they're doing. Man. I gotta ask you guys, and those of you going to the conference, are you struggling to find housing? Every single hotel, I've been saying this, is booked solid. Tip for you, I found out that the Wyndham Hotel or the Wyndham Vacation Timeshare is right next door to the conference, and it's very affordable. So there's a good tip. I just secured my Wyndham vacation home. Didn't have to go through a program. No, I'm not signing. It's they rent them out through VRBO. So check it out. You literally have a short walk. It's literally across the street, this facility is. So if you're having a problem finding a place to stay, check that out. Very good. Let's see here. I just got a note from Jack Nunnery. He has to go. Already, Jack, you just joined us. How can you be leaving immediately? That's just, he had to go, so he had to drop. Oh, shoot. He's got some dental work he's having done. But let's get to Les Parker. Wanted to get Jack's thoughts on what's going on in the market, but we'll just have to wait until next week. But anyway, Kittle's here. Got the rest of the group in. We'll get to their comments. But let's get over to Les Parker on the TM Spotlight and a macro view of the markets. Les Parker, what do you have for us today?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Bears are hot for him. Bulls are hot for him. We're all hot for him. And Jay's so cold.
Last Friday, the lack of movement of the shape of the yield curve showed how the market absorbed the Fed chairman's well-telegraphed words. Meanwhile, investors took Jay Powell's steadfastness to heart and increased their confidence that a 2023 recession happens. The dollar's positive reaction to Powell's speech supports a brief rise in the 10-year T-note yield. Look for calmer, yet erratic swings within a new range from 231 to 267. Who's the bleeding volcano? Catch Who's Cold at tmspotlight.com.
All right, there, Gary Catchable and Les Parker teamed up on that one again. Good job. Les Parker, you never cease to amaze me with the music that you select. It's so out of character for those of you that are less. It is hilarious. But anyway, good job on that. And before we start talking about the markets, get everyone in on that. Let's get over to Matt Graham, who is here to give us a live report. Matt, you need to – I mean, I'm still bobbing my head back to the music that he just was playing there. So, come on, you need to kind of like get a boombox in the background and go, I got some work for you today. So, Matt Graham, Mr. Excited.
Yeah, maybe. Maybe that. Yeah. Maybe someday, Dave, but not today.
Maybe not today.
Incidentally, Les meant 331 to 267, and yeah. He sent out a note about that. So, just – throwing that out there in case anybody caught that. And yep. That's a pretty good range. That's one of my technical levels as well. So last week, let's set it up first. The background, which has been and continues to be the background, is rates spiking in June due to a CPI beat coming in higher than expected during a Fed blackout period. Markets worried what the Fed was going to say. So rates peaked by the following Wednesday and then fell after the Fed. Then in July, weaker economic data helped rates move lower. the market heard what Powell had to say on July 27th at the press conference in two different ways, and this is really what set us up for the entire month of August. Powell basically meant to give the impression that the Fed was shifting gears from having a full pedal to the metal stance when it came to rate hikes or policy tightening, and would then be more data dependent going forward. The market read that as some sort of deceleration in policy tightening, but all it really meant was that policy tightening would be more data dependent going forward and wouldn't necessarily be slowing down. We heard a chorus of Fed speakers reiterate that recently, and this is exactly what we expected Powell to say in Jackson Hole. But at the same time, we were cognizant of the fact that some market participants may have been misunderstanding Powell and may have been looking for something more conciliatory on Friday. So there were a lot of people that accurately identified what the Fed was thinking. And it wasn't really hard if you were paying close attention or listening to this podcast, but there were, you know, a chorus of market mavens who were saying Jackson Hole won't matter because the Fed's been so clear in telegraphing this stuff. But there was some underappreciation of how oblivious some of the market was to those risks. So when Powell came out and basically gave the as expected speech, which was, if you weren't prepared for it, it was very hawkish. The stock market reacted particularly poorly, and that may have masked a little bit of the weaker sentiment in bonds, which are now free to do their sell-off this morning. So at the time, not a huge reaction in bonds on Friday, but if you caught it, you know it was a big negative reaction in stocks. And now this morning, moving higher yet again with yields testing their highest levels in months. And currently at 3.13, or currently 3.11, but as high as 3.13 earlier today. And you'd have to go back to, end of June to see anything higher. So we got that going for us, which isn't great. Mortgage rates approaching 6%, depending on how you want to count them. Could be over, could be under. As far as nuts and bolts in Powell's speech, I think that maybe it's hard to pinpoint exactly which comment was the most troubling for those who weren't prepared for it, but I'll just give you a few of the ones that I noticed. Saying the neutral estimate of the Fed funds rate of 2.375% is not a place to stop or pause when it comes to rate hikes. It's really reiterating that, you know, policy hasn't leveled off here. It's just going to be more data dependent. And he did say that as well, that the September rate hike will depend on the totality of data since the July meeting. He said the historical record cautions strongly against loosening monetary policy prematurely. And price stability will require maintaining a restrictive stance for quote unquote some time. And then the sobering part of the message, the one that we've heard and talked about, is something to the effect of there's going to be bad times ahead in order to fight inflation. And he said that yet again, likely to be some softening of labor conditions and some pain for households as they fight inflation. So upward pressure on rates, waiting to see how the economic data comes in before deciding on the next move. To that end, this week's key data probably doesn't really start happening until Thursday with ISM manufacturing, but the Chicago PMI on Wednesday could move the needle. The biggest market mover is Friday's jobs report, but not as big as the upcoming inflation data may be. I think the unfortunate thing about bonds recovering this Friday after a jobs report that is, you know, maybe lower than expected is that when you look at it against the previous jobs report, which was much, much higher than expected, it will just be viewed as volatility or noise in the bigger picture and perhaps not have any implication about the bigger picture trend in the labor market. In other words, it would take two jobs reports from now to form some sort of consensus on any change that's occurring in the labor market. So yeah, we're up against the ceiling, hoping for, you could hope for bad data, you know, and hurt feelings of people who want the economy to be strong, or you could hope for good data, in which case rates probably continue higher. So bad news for somebody, no matter how you slice it. And that's the mortgage market right now.
That is. Such a good point. And Les Parker texted me, said, be sure to tell Matt how much I appreciate him reading it. Me reading out that correction. 331 versus 231. Yeah, he thanked you. I was going to bring that up, but I want to get you fully introduced here, and then we could talk about that and bring that up. But you did it. Thank you. Les, thank you. I thank you. So much of what's going on in this market, it is just insane, crazy at so many levels, and can't wait to get into one of the other topics we're going to be talking about. David Kipp is going to bring it up. But before we go there, let's get all the regulars turn on their phones, and let's talk about these interest rates, this current market that we're in. Let's go with Mark Helm. Mark, your thoughts when you look at this, thoughts on, or your thoughts on the market from capital markets and interest rates. Mark?
Well, I think it's very interesting right now, David. As you know, you and I have seen four or five of these cycles in our industry. Mm-hmm. This has a good probability of being one of the toughest cycles we've ever seen. That concerns me greatly for the industry, but it also is a time that grows opportunity. It's a time to fine-tune our origination machines, deciding whether we want to get in servicing or not. And it's also a time where we can do more planning than we have, because we're not just bustling every day from the work that's going on that's taking us away from the proper planning that needs to run an effective mortgage company. I think the cycle will be with us for a while. I don't have a crystal ball that's any better than anybody else on the phone, but I think it's a while. I don't know what that is. That's 6 months, that's a year, that's 2 years, who knows? But I know other people on the phone have some really solid opinions on that, so I'm interested in listening to that. But we'll ride this tide just like we've done all the ones in the past. And, you know, hopefully each time we come out of these, we come out of a little bit better of an industry. And I think that'll happen on this cycle too. Thank you, yes. David.
You bet. Mr. Kittle, your thoughts?
Well, thanks, David. It's good to be here again. Happy Monday to everybody. I think anytime in our industry you have rising interest rates, not a good thing. And they're going to continue to rise a little bit. They've never been so low as to go up this high. I believe, you know, if you're running a company out there right now, you need to be looking in your market to associate with a bank to where you might be able to originate some of their adjustable rate loan products. ARMs are going to be coming back in vogue. We're at 6% and start to go higher than that. And people are on the cocaine candy of 2.5% mortgages over the last few years. Then you're going to have to get into an ARM market. You know, what are caps? What are the adjustments, and learn how to sell them, and what's a fully indexed rate? There's a lot of originators out there that have never done that before.
Well, I think that's the thing that's such an interesting part about this cycle, that, you know, this is, you know, it's more pronounced. It's just dramatically more pronounced. It's only because of the heights that we rose to, the expansion, the rate of expansion. But it's just astounding to me how many people are living off of the fumes of their savings and what they made in the recent years. And they're in the market, and they said, we believe we have the fuel. We're going to price at such a thin margin that everyone cannot compete against us. And we think we have enough fuel in the tank to last for a long period of time doing that, and we're going to drive people out. We're looking at some pricing right now that's just absolutely nuts. Matt, do you follow pricing of what's going on? I know, David, I'll let you jump in. You started making a comment. You've seen that, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, Matt, are you following what others are doing? You report what the markets are doing. Do you have much optics in on how people are pricing based on the data that you're reporting?
Oh yeah, I mean that's one of the main things that I do behind the scenes is keep a very awesome and accurate mortgage rate index that is a little bit more nimble than some of the other ones out there. And so yeah, very familiar. Never seen anything like the current environment. Well, I mean I have, but not in this particular way. The stratification is ridiculous. The coupon compression has led to, you know, you can have really big swings depending on how people are quoting, and people are quoting very differently. And a lot of shops aren't in the habit of quoting with discount points, but right now points are very valuable. And some people don't realize other loan officers are quoting with points just to open the conversation and aren't necessarily ending up closing at those rates. But yeah, definitely some very, very big swings between lenders, depending on the day, depending on the lender. And some very weird or innovative, depending on what you want to call it, tactics to compete and to try to maximize market share, which may or may not pay off.
Which may or not pay off. I'm looking at an email. We're going to talk about this in just a minute. Alice has, but then their tagline behind Union Home, it says promises kept. I think that's a great thing because there are companies out there, they're quoting interest rates, and you got to be really careful about this. Are you monitoring lender listeners? Are you monitoring this? Because what's being said in the field, there's a whole compliance department, and Alice is going to talk about in her segment just in a minute some things that are going on. It has to do with evaluations, but it's crazy out there. But good stuff going, gang, regulars, thank you so much. I could get on this topic for a long, long time. I know Nunnery would have a lot to say on this one if he was here with us. But Matt, your rate survey, your screens are outstanding. I love what you do here. Again, for everyone that did not hear the correction, Les misspoke. He said 2.31 to 2.67. He meant 3.31 to 2.67. So we have now corrected that three times. We got it covered. Matt Graham, thank you so much for being here. Get signed up. If you're using Matt's service or interested in getting into the system and learning it, you can get a free demo of that extended demo trial period. And it's not a demo. It's an actual trial. You're actually using the real system, and you can do so without a credit card required, which is otherwise required. And then you can do that if you put in the LOL for Lickin' on Lending podcast. That's the sign-up code. Get it extended trial. For new with no credit card. Matt, thank you so much for extending that out to our listeners. We're grateful to have you here each and every week. I don't know what's going on in my mouth today, Matt. I'm just like.
Thank you, Dave. You're going to, you'll get there. I have faith.
I know. I need to slow down. Start talking like you
are. Take a page out of my book. There you go.
Take a page. All right. Appreciate it, Matt. Thanks so much. Let's get over to David Kittle, who is talking. This is interesting what you're going to be talking about, David. I think it's really fascinating. Because it's something that, again, where we're seeing history repeat itself a bit. Go ahead, Sister Kittle, good to have you back.
Yeah, good. Good to be here. So, David, you know, we had an event for the country last week. President Biden decided to forgive up to $10,000 in student loan debt. And regardless of how you feel about that from an ethical, a moral, a political standpoint, or even a legal standpoint, because it is going to be challenged over and over again. How are the markets going to react to that? How's Fannie Freddie going to look at that? How are we going to underwrite that? Because there's been a ton of chatter today back and forth on some underwriting websites that I go back and forth to. And everybody's really concerned about it because we're in forbearance. That forbearance is now they're going to have to start making payments on their student loans after the first of the year if this thing goes as it's planned. And you've got people walking away from debt that they signed up for. So it is an interesting, unintended consequence from what was announced last week.
Yeah. And it's not the first time they surfaced it. And what's so interesting, I mean, I've done, most of you guys know, I've done a whole bunch of Fox interviews. And it gets to the point where they just call me, hey, Dave, we need you on at this time. Can you go to this studio and go to that studio? And I mean, there are many times I'd ask what the topic is, but I was, for this reason, this time, as on this very topic, back in the Obama administration where Biden was the VP, and where they called me and said, can you come on? I said, sure. I said, and then as I'm going driving in, I said, hey, by the way, what's the topic? And it says the forgiveness of student loan debt. And you're going to be debating Dr. Leonard Bernstein. And I go, oh, crap. What? He's a super smart guy. And I'm going, he's taking that position? How the heck can economists do that? So I turned to someone I respect tremendously, Doug Duncan. I said, Doug, I got him on the phone. He's kind enough to take my call. And I said, Doug, I'm going up against Leonard Bernstein. Oh, Lenny, good. What are you talking about? It said, forgiveness of student loan debt. He says, oh, yeah, that's a good one. I cannot believe he even said, I can't believe he's behind this and trying to get it on. Of course, he's supporting what his boss wanted. And he said, Dave, when you get on national television, ask this question of Dr. Leonard Bernstein. Ask him. How does this square up with one of the fundamental laws of economics, and that's property rights? Because what they're messing with, Mr. Kittle, is property rights. There are bondholders that made investments in the Sallie Mae funds, the securities out there, and they're talking about devaluing that. That is a personal asset of somebody out there. And there, this is going to get challenged. I doubt it's going to go through. And yet people are saying it's happening. They're treating it as if it is already done. So you're right. And then
you know,
go ahead.
No, well, it makes me think back, you know, my year as chairman in 2009, we were going through bankruptcy cramdown, where the left, Dick Durbin, was all about taking the strip and the tranche and a security and lowering the interest rate and lowering the Mount Due. And, you know, our argument, which was correct and spot on from MBA, was who's ever going to invest in these again, ever, when your investment can just arbitrarily be knocked down in rate and what is owed to you. So the unintended consequences from an underwriting standpoint, from a bond standpoint to do this, they never think it through.
I know. Well, it's a politician getting in someone else's business. Again, politicians, stay in your lane. Yeah. Do not get involved in the mortgage business. You'll mess it up. Good point, Mr. Kittle. It's going to be something that is going to be challenged. I doubt it's going to happen, come through, but who knows? We've seen some really crazy things being done by this administration right now. Thank you, David. It's good to have you back. By the way, you phoned in a report, and we did actually talk about it, about John Corson. Is John doing okay? Did you get a quick report?
About John, our good friend, former NBA chairman, and just to let everybody know, John fell and was not doing well. He is improving, and he's such a good friend of the industry. He ran NBA for a while, and John is improving. So thoughts and prayers go out to he and Marcia and the family, and thanks for bringing that up and giving me the opportunity.
Yeah, he is truly, he's one of the gentlemen in this industry, and we got a lot of good gentlemen, and you're one of them. So we're glad to have you here, Mr. Kittle. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you, David. Yeah. Welcome.
You bet. Alice Alvey is here with Union Home Mortgage with her segment. Alice is CMB, Vice President of Education Training at Union Home, where promises are kept. I love that, Alice. I see that in the signature behind. It's one of your comments, or it's in the logo there. So very good job. Good job. Like that.
Yeah, we love it. You know, we use it internally as well. So promises kept is, yes, we want to make sure we close loans on time and do all of that, but it's also internally where promises kept to each other. So all the way down to as simple as if I say I'm going to call you back today, I'm calling you back today, and if I can't get it done, I'm going to tell you why. So it's a core value for us, both internally and for customers.
Good, very good. Well, you're here with week's legislative update. I'm really interested in this
one. So a couple of things. So first of all, can I throw in a comment back on the whole rate discussion that we had earlier?
I'm sorry to come to you. I am so sorry. My apologies.
That's fine. Well, I was listening to what Mark and David had to say, and you, of course, and one of the things, too, I think is important is you guys were talking about the kind of that how do we get through this cycle, how long is the cycle going to last, and these really, really tight margins, and how are lenders operating at this. It's short-term thinking that's driving some of this, trying to keep PE investors happy, trying to keep stockholders, shareholders happy. And, you know, servicing valuations are also a part of that, you know, we've looked at the companies who are thinking long term. They will be here for a long time. But the short term thinkers with those tight margins on how are they operating, that's just, you know, don't follow stupid is what I say when you're in the mortgage industry.
Stupid. What was that movie? As stupid is, the stupid does. What was that?
But, so very interesting and a very different cycle with the housing prices the way they are with rates rising. So more to come. It's going to take a lot to get the housing overheated under control again. So anyway, from a legislative standpoint, just wanted to make sure everyone had a chance to hear Marcia Fudge on CNN. She was out there about 6 days ago. The headline of the discussion was about a black couple who was suing for an appraisal problem. So what happened was that they have an appraisal done on their home that came in at about, I think it was $425,000. And then what they did was what was called whitewash the home. So they took out their family photos. They then had a white friend of theirs, a white colleague, be the one to be there when the appraiser showed up. And that second appraisal came in at over $300,000 higher. And wow. Marcia was brought in to talk about cases that were cited. Now, the case isn't settled yet. This is a lawsuit mm-hmm. that just came out. But our secretary, so for those of you who don't know, HUD is Marcia Fudge is secretary of the Department of Housing and Urban Development. And so the discussion led into what is HUD doing about this. And she referenced what's referred to that I can share with you now is that PAVE group. So it's Property Appraisal and Valuation Equity Task Force that was put together. And they mm-hmm. published a report back in March that has some really interesting data. So what these entities are, these agencies who pulled together this task force, everybody's included. Included the appraisal subcommittee is involved in this. Mm-hmm. Federal Reserve, CFPB, Department of Ag, Department of Justice, Department of Labor, VA, FHA, FHFA, NCUA. Huge task force to be able to take some action on what was identified as needs for changing in the testing for appraisers, needs in changes for the training that they receive, that there did appear to be some issues that absolutely have to be addressed to make sure we avoid what might be in some cases deliberate and other cases unconscious bias going on within appraisals today. Some more to follow on that, but since that was in the news on CNN, I thought I'd add a little background about that task force that was put together. So what Ms. Fudge was talking about wasn't action that they're taking as a result of the lawsuit. It's action that has already been started back in March.
Yeah.
So I wanted to clarify that point. Then last but not least for our listeners, if you can please keep in mind that USDA has a proposed rule out there. You have until October 3rd to comment, but do not delay. Get it done in September because football season is going to be starting by then and you're going to forget all about it. So, right? High school football started. That's a true sign of time.
Yeah.
And, college football. Anyway, it's the good stuff. Yeah, so please go out there and comment. We do want USDA to put the gas pedal on allowing delegated underwriting authority for lenders. So please check that out and respond. So I'll turn it back to you, Dave.
Very good. Is it Michigan or Michigan State that you're the raving fan of?
Oh, we are U of M. Our daughter's got a PhD out of U of M. So
there you go.
Where are you then? But I have other family in Michigan State, so we're those house divided.
Yeah, house divided. Yeah, that's like an interesting family reunion, especially if they're both playing, and it's at Thanksgiving. They play their rivals, so they play at the Thanksgiving typically. I think if I recall correctly. So anyway, it's fun to watch those games. We love football in this football season. I'm adding a new covered patio with a drop down TV and heaters out there, so we're going to extend our football watching season outside. I said, you guys get too rowdy inside, so we're putting it outside. I kicked out of the house, so we said, fine, buy living room furniture, put it outside, put heaters out there, and look at the beauty. That's why you do it. Get your long neck Coors out there and enjoy some good Barbie and a long neck bottle of beer. So anyway, yeah, we drink beer. How about that? Anyway, Alice Alvey,
bourbon,
so good.
David, bourbon.
It's bourbon. Well, that's what you do when you're up in Kentucky. Yeah, that's what you do up there, Mr. Kittle. That's so good, Alice. Appreciate you. Thank you, David. And Kittle's got the outdoor setting. I mean, you should take a look at some of his Facebook posts or LinkedIn. I mean, it is just like he's sitting with his feet up. So much fun. Matt Graham just dropped. Matt, we love you. Thanks for being here. Let's get over to Alan Pollock, who joined us from sunny Florida. Man, talk about a journey of buying a home. This guy has been through it. Alan Pollock, good to have you here. Alan is here with our weekly pick update. Alan?
Well, good afternoon. Happy Monday. And I got to tell you, David, more action on the home buying process. Another home in my neighborhood popped up way overpriced. They had at least 40 showings in one day, and they went with 4 offers. And I don't know which is selected, but I did not put an offer in. And the reason that that house, when the market is normalizing, and the reason that that house went off the hook, off the chain, whatever you want to call it, is because it was staged absolutely amazing.
That's interesting. Staging is such a big part of what it can do. And it costs money to have that extra, but, man, you can usually get it back in spades. Move your furniture out.
So it was over $500 a square foot. When everything around it is in the high 300s and 400s. And we'll see if the deal actually closes and what happens. But there is some weird stuff going on out there.
Offers, because we're watching other properties up in Bellevue, Washington, where my brother sold his home. It's like all these listings are coming and they're sitting there. They're just sitting there. So there are markets. So Florida's a hot market. Still, all those New Yorkers trying to get out of that blue state and get down to a good red state. So put that a little
true.
Anyway.
So, I don't have any funny jokes this week. Actually, I'll give you one. So my daughter just went off to college, and she's in her second week of school. And I said hi to her, and I had no intention of sending her a joke. And she messaged me, and she goes, "Any dad jokes today?" So I said, what did the buffalo say to his son when he dropped him off at college? And she goes, "What?" And I said, "Bye, son." So that was a good dad joke of the week.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's so you tell bad jokes. I mean, dad jokes. It's bad dad.
Oh,
anyway,
all the time.
Yeah. All the time. So you're
they go together. That. Yes, bad dad jokes. Yes,
bad dad jokes. All right. Yeah, there you go. So what do you have for a tech update? What about the digital conference and that's coming up? Talk about that. I want to get your thoughts on that.
Well, I'll give you my thoughts. I won't be there. I'm not a sponsor this year. I think that we as an industry are teched out at the moment. So it's a good time for vendors to get together and talk about partnerships and better ways to serve our customers. But for me on the technology side, it's just not a conference that at this moment in time that is worthwhile, especially with National coming right around the corner.
Right around the corner.
There's so many prosperous conversations to have and planning for next year and synchronization with vendors and customers. So I think, the term conferenced out is or not the right time and place is what some people have said. But I know there's people that are excited to be there, and it is worth their time and effort and money. So definitely not negating that. But, David, I got to tell you, I want to start off. There's more layoffs in the industry, and I just want to put it out there that there's a lot of places to go. I am hiring. I am hiring tech people. So feel free to reach out. You can connect with me again, alan@tms-advisors.com. But separately, somebody reached out to me, David, and they asked, what do I do if now is the time to put your technology team together as a lender, right? Mm-hmm. Bank or non-bank, who do I need? What's the right team to have? And so we've talked a lot of times in the past about CTO, CIO, CISO, which is Chief Information Security Officer. Mm-hmm. What I want to talk about today is outside of those roles, if you're just looking to put a team together and maybe you're going to do some light development, maybe you're going to just integrate something on the back end like your CRM, you need certain individuals on your team. And I'll bring up who they are and what they are really quick. But I want to bring up the most important thing that you need, and that is going to be a tester. And so you need somebody that can actually understand the workflow from your point of view. They can bring in the vendor's point of view, and they can test the technology or the interface and make sure that it is adaptable, that it works, that the compassionate level of a user to technology, right, how we use technology, doesn't add a burden, right? Some things are built and planned out well, but they don't actually get used well. So that quality assurance tester is one of the most important. But you know who the second most important person is, David? And I'll tell you why it starts with the two. It is your business analyst.
Oh, yeah.
And maybe you want to call them a product owner because you need someone to understand the business and to be able to communicate with the business. And they have to work with the tester. And the reason that I start with those two, if you're a lender, is because if you decide to not build and work with your vendors, those are still two of the most important people that you need, right? So working with vendors, you need those two. That's a business analyst or a product owner. And then working on the quality assurance side, you need that QA person. Now, as soon as you start getting into building your own tech, then you want to start thinking about, right, do you need a designer, which would be a user interface design. You hear UI, UX, those terms thrown around. If you're not too technical, they just mean user interface design, the experience of what the user goes through. Then you have your engineering side, which may be 1, 2, 3, or many more engineers. And then there's a whole separate conversation, which is outsourcing. But let's just stick to insourcing right now. And then finally, you have on top of that you're going to have a database team or a database person, somebody who understands. We're beyond the days where your dev person and your database are the same, because there's too much involved with data at rest, with security, with how you manage the information. So that's your initial team. You can call it a pod if you want. You got a product owner or a BA. You have an engineer, and you have a tester. And that would be the initial team that you set up. And the way things are going right now, it's a perfect time to find great individuals. It's a perfect time to invest and grow that team, even if you want to put them through the Mortgage School of Training, right, your own Mortgage 101, or there's other institutions within our industry that do that. Now's a great time to get them connected, build some camaraderie, and get them up to speed on your internal processes. So hopefully for the gentleman that asked me that question, I thought it was a great topic. I hope I answered it. And David, that's it for this week. I hope we stirred up some good conversation.
You did. The Bison one already got a couple comments coming in on that one. So Bison. Anyway, Tim Cook, what do you think about product testers? I think about the story that, remember the Egghead software stores, Alan? Those were around everywhere. Everyone you could go buy. Remember we used to buy our software at Egghead Software? It was one of the stores. And they were like
USA. There was a bunch of them.
Yep. There was a bunch of them back then. Tim Cook, who was the founder of Intuit, if I'm recalling this correctly, I think I have his name. I get that name correct? Tim, I think it was Tim Cook, would sit in the background, and he would go to the store as a tester. He would go in. He said, the best way is let's wait and watch how the consumer that buys our product handles this. So he used to act like he'd, you know, stock people in there. It's shopping for accounting. And he'd wait till someone go over there to buy the software. And as they're approaching the cash register, he would come up and say, can I buy that for you? I see that you selected it. My name is Tim Cook. I'm the CEO and founder of Intuit. If I recall, correct me if I got the strong stories wrong. Someone can Google away in the background. And what happened, he says, I will buy this for you and give you free support for the lifetime of this product if you will agree to allow us to come home and watch you install it. Me and I got a couple of engineers stuck in the car. So we're going to watch you install it. And we want to note everything that is goes along. Again, the benefit for you is you're going to get free lifetime support. This is a great product. So they asked them why they bought it. What went into that? That helped the marketing people. Then they watched them try to install it, followed them home, watched them try to install it. That came after that. These days, that was a long time ago. We would not do that, stalkers and that type of thing. We let strangers in our home. Well, they did back in those days. And then, but they watched them and they made all these notes of everything. And that's why that product has done as well as it has for so long, because they were so intentional about creating the UX, the user experience, and creating it in such a way that it was flawless and it's so easy. I think that's one of the things that quickened into it today is what it is. And that's one of the thoughts. As you were giving your report, Alan, I thought that was one of the thoughts. Yeah, that's good. I ignored Alice on the rate section. I'm so sorry. Alice, what's your thoughts on Alan's report today? Anything you want to add?
No, I was just trying to think through, what your comments were about following, you know, to your customers to understand what their real experience is. And I think that is so key. And it takes a lot of time. People get anxious. They want to go perhaps by what the loan officer thinks the borrower needs in the product. But doing that consumer view testing is so critical for any of the technology. And I would agree with you, Alan, that it's, when is it? Is it technology overload and we now have five things in the stack we have to try and figure out? So I thought your perspective was very interesting.
Yeah, thank you.
I agree. Mark,
you know, David, there.
Yes, go ahead.
Sorry, Mark, to cut you off real quick. There are now college courses and degrees in the way that people in technology interact and understanding what emotionally affects somebody and their success rate on using technology. And it definitely plays true to the largest consumer purchase that somebody will ever make, something to think about.
Well, seeing as Mark is only 2 hours away from getting a PhD in psychology or family counseling, Mark, what are your thoughts? That's good. That's a segue for you.
Well, you keep selling me, David. I might have to hang up shingle before long.
It's true, though. You're amazing, though. Yeah.
I don't know. But let me I think seeing a course like that is very important, because I think that in education, and I do consider myself an educator, we have to look at all the dynamics that are affecting what our people are going to see when they walk into the employment environment. And I certainly believe that what you just brought up is a good example of that. And if we don't prepare people leaving college to be able to deal with those things when they go into the work environment, it's going to lead right into what I'm getting ready to talk about in my program. We're if you don't plan to succeed, you're planning to fail. And that's a good example of it, because you've got to arm people with the tools they need to do their job in an appropriate manner and really understand what's happening around them. And there probably needs to be a lot more implications of that done in other fields of education too, and just not in technology. But I'm glad to hear that's happening in technology. I know a little bit about that, but I'm very glad to hear that, because I think it's going to be a real helping tool for people entering technology careers.
Well, we're going to be back at you in just with you in just a minute on the servicing side, but let's get Mr. Kittle's thoughts on what Alan's report is. Mr. Kittle, your thoughts?
Hey, I can't even spell IT, for goodness sake, David. What are you talking about?
It's two letters, and I can't tell. You are so funny.
No, but I think it's a great report. I really don't have anything to add to that. I think he's spot on, as he usually is, actually.
Yes, he usually is. Yeah, that guy. His humor sometimes, Mr. Kettle, we sometimes question his humor, but we do love his report each and every week.
I'm not even going to talk about the joke he said. That was probably
by some.
not in the top 100. But
not even on the top 100.
Well, I do appreciate the feedback, but David, I'll tell you, my school of jokes where I learned them is the same place where Les Parker learned how to sing.
Parker's listening in the background. I know that'll get you a phone call quickly. Well, thank you, Alan, for the tech report.
Yeah, Les owes me lunch, so I think that'll spark up the lunch conversation.
And I'll probably get it going again. That's hilarious. Les does have a gorgeous voice, and he is one talented musician. The song choices he makes is just something else. That's just so not like Les Parker. But that's it. That wraps up the tech report. Alan Pollack, you can reach him, email him via Alan, A-L-L-E-N, at tms-advisors.com. And he also, give a word in for your product that you also sell. You also work with a tech company, one of the leading ones. Go ahead, give him a little shout-out, Alan. Let's give him some space.
Oh, sure. Thanks. I am the chief product innovator at Open Close. We're a loan origination system, and we do all this fun stuff that we talk about each week.
Each and every week. And he also consults with us in his spare time, how he has spare time. He has programmers he manages overseas. This guy is, I don't know when the man sleeps. And he's trying to help buy a home. Well, good luck on that. Alan, thank you so much. Let's get over to Mark Helm. One of the most important topics out there is the loan servicing, Mark. And we're just so grateful. It was Jack's idea to start these two additional segments. And we're still thrilled we did. That's the David Kittle's production segment and yours on the servicing. So servicing is at the end of the caboose, and so is the process. So we have you at the end of the program, but certainly we save the best for last.
Well, thank you, David. It's interesting how the last segment kind of played into what I want to talk about today. You know, I use that statement, you know, when you don't do proper planning, you got problems. And so failure to plan is planning to fail in my book. And it goes for servicing, and too many people are failing to plan in servicing, and that's what I want to spend time on talking about that day and the different segments where it's applicable inside the servicing arena. One of my pet peeves in a down market is that as we try to cut cost inside organizations, it's one thing to cut processing people in backroom operations for origination and loan officers, et cetera, but when they start cutting into the servicing staff that's needed to perform on a daily basis and take care of the customers just because they're looking for decreasing costs everywhere, that is a real failure to plan, because it can be a nightmare for customers. So I want to put that little seed out there for those of you listening in that have a servicing portfolio and you're thinking about taking some staffing out of servicing to help with your cost overall. Be very, very careful what you do and how you do it, because it has a long-term critical effect on the company. But let me talk a little bit about this planning cycle that we have in servicing. There are many elements that you have to plan for when you're going to be a servicer, and it's not necessarily a list you have to follow item by item in a certain order, but there is a list you have to follow. And I'm going to talk in generalities about those items today so you can have an understanding and give you a couple blurbs about each one to make you understand the full impact of it, okay? Staffing comes to mind as one of the chief things. Not all servicing operations that started up have started in areas where there have been plentiful servicing people in that area. So you not only have to look for the fact that you might have to recruit from outside of your city or your state, and that involves an extra cost in bringing servicing people in when you're relocating them in to do that. So you need to be planning on where is the proper place to have servicing portfolios. And you've seen that happen quite immensely over the years. If we've seen consolidation of servicing in certain areas of the country. There's Midwest consolidation, Western consolidation. Dallas was a big servicing hub and still is for a number of years. Houston at one time was. Atlanta has been. Out of Charlotte, North Carolina, Rock Hill, South Carolina, there's a large servicing hub, and there's a large servicing hub in the New Jersey, New York, Long Island area. So you see those kind of happen in different areas for the reason I just talked about, where you can have access to people because people look for opportunities, and that allows them to find opportunities right in their own backyard. So I think it's very, very important to plan your staffing. And using professionals to help you find that staffing is probably one of the best roads you can go to, because they will weed out a lot of folks that you might not want to consider and give you the best possible candidates that would go down. So I salute my comrades on the phone here who do that as part of the services they provide. That is something that can be very valuable to the customer. The next thing is looking at facilities. And facilities are a big deal right now because we've seen so many companies actually cut back on the use of facilities right now because of COVID and the fact that they have so many people working at home and so many people are using outsourcing. So one of the things you really have to deal with up front before you go make a commitment to servicing in a facility is the same thing you have to do in the mortgage production. You don't go lease office space for mortgage production unless you believe in your heart. Maybe it won't, but you believe in your heart it's going to survive the term of the lease, okay, because you don't want to get stuck with those losses on the back end if it does not. Same thing about servicing. Why would you want to walk in and create a lease for 50,000 square feet if you're pretty sure you're going to do some outsourcing, you're going to do some remote working and other things to reduce the staff being in-house? And if you're going to do that stuff, you need to understand what you're doing up front and what your plan is, so you don't lease more space than you need, but certainly have the space necessary for growth that you might need down the road. And I'm going to save the remote employee and the outsourcing for a whole different topic. That'll be a standalone topic by itself as we talk about things later on. The third thing I want to talk about is systems. There are numerous servicing systems that are available out there. There's one servicing system that services over 50% of the loans in the industry. But there's lots of other servicing systems, and there's homegrown servicing systems inside companies. And the most important thing that I want to tell you about servicing systems is they can cross the T's and dot compliant, and that is the most important thing. But backing up from that, the next most important thing is continuity, and that continuity comes from loans moving from your origination system into your servicing system. You want that to be a systems process with appropriate quality control and not a manual process, because that leads to all kind of problems. You show me a shop that's got problems with servicing, and I'll show you a shop that probably did not do a good job of moving the data on over their loans before they started servicing. So be thinking about when you're looking at servicing systems, be doing run your tests, call some of the people in the service tied into the origination system to a servicing system, and ask them how it has worked for them and the interfaces has worked, because that should be a major ingredient on how you decide which servicing system to go to. And I guess the next thing that's very important to me is good attorneys. It's good to have attorneys route you through the contracting process for not only your servicing system, but your facilities, et cetera. And we'll talk about that in a different segment later on of how we utilize our attorneys to make sure we're complying and doing things the right way and dealing with us on our exceptions, because exceptions not dealt with or issues that come up not dealt with, it involves attorneys, can turn into a nightmare for servicing if they're not dealt with efficiently and in a manner that's appropriate for your company and end up the best possible solution for you as you go down the road. And I want to put a plug in here. I won't mention any names, but I want to put a plug in. I had a gentleman that worked for me for a while and is an attorney and one of the superstars in the industry. And I should not say work with me. He really worked for me. He really worked with me because he was a collaborative person and kept me out of trouble a lot of times. And after he left the company, he went out and did numerous things. But he has partnered up with a gentleman, and they built a database of all the that you use in all kind of types of lending, everything from banks to student lending to mortgage lending, et cetera. And they built a compliant document database. And banks are signing up to use our service, new banks, small mortgage companies, large mortgage companies, because it puts the compliance of documents internal to a company. That's all they do is work on compliance of documents and making sure they keep those documents updated with state requirements. So that's something new that's happening out there, and they're probably one of the biggest and maybe one of the best at doing this today. And that's something, if I ever started a new mortgage company, I'd want to consider. And going into that, I think the most other important items that we can talk about, and I'll close out with this for today, is the QC process and compliance process. It's a big deal to make a decision who you want to use for QC and compliance. And it's a big deal to make the decision whether you want to do it internally or contract it out. So it's, first of all, if you're going to do it yourself, you need to hire people that know what they're doing. Second, if you do not do that, you need to outsource with people that can do a great job for you and have some specific experience relative to kind of QC you want. QC and compliance can make you and break you in the lending environment and in the servicing environment. So I think you need to pay extraordinary attention to that and make sure you cross your T's and dot your I's when hiring people or selecting vendors. And, David, I'm going to end with that for today. I'm going to talk next week about vendors and agency approvals and licensing and selecting and having appropriate people in the financial services side of your operation, such as your CFO and controller, to make sure they understand all about servicing before you get into it. Thank you so much for the opportunity to share these things with everyone today. And I hope they'll be beneficial to you as you move down the road if you're deciding to be a servicer.
Well, they are. They're beneficial, Mark. And I think there's some of our questions that our listeners are texting in questions literally as we're talking. Can you give us some real insights? Is remote, I know you're going to talk about this, you're going to do a whole segment on it, but just real quickly, remote servicing customer support people, is this a good thing? Is it looked upon favorably by the agencies? They don't care. What are your thoughts real quickly? We've got a couple questions around that one. That one answer will knock out these two questions for listeners.
Okay. I have had conversations with the agency. Some of the agencies are concerned about that. I'm concerned about that. David, it's hard enough to manage people and get the kind of productivity you wanted to them in an office environment. And when you turn people loose to work at home where the children are playing behind them or they're distracted getting ready for supper and trying to do their jobs and all these other things, is it a great benefit for the employee? It is. You know, they don't have that commute time to work. They're not spending money on gasoline. And they should, in the most part, be more focused. And I think many of them are. But if you got the people that weren't of that focused mentality and you put them in that environment and they really can't manage themselves to be productive, you better have really good metrics to manage what they're doing at home. And you also need to be on top of everything they're doing from a compliance area, because you might end up having somebody you're paying 8 hours a day for doing 4 hours worth of work. And I know you don't want that. So you got to figure out a way to manage that. And I know of no one who has mastered the art of managing that. I've been in this industry 45 years now, and when I think about trying to manage that process of people working remote, it's bigger than a breadbasket, and I'm not sure I, with all my experience, can put all the pieces together and do an effective job with that. So I certainly think it's something we got to pay attention to.
Yeah, well, certainly there's a lot of pressure to do so, but I want to get your perspective on that. We'll be talking more. I can't wait. A number of people wrote, the one guy that wrote back says, I love Mark's perspective. Can't wait. Hurry up, Mark. Get to that part. So, yeah, we got listeners already cheering you on. That's good. That's excellent. Get around to those of us that are in, got servicing. Alice, do you want to add anything to what Mark's report is? Anything for the good of the listeners? Okay, not. Mr. Kittle, your thoughts? And then come to you, Alan.
No, nothing to add. Mark's the best. How can you top that?
That's so true. Alan Pollock.
Well, I agree with David. The only thing I'll mention is on the servicing technology side, staying with compliance, I can only just suggest that technology is good, but it only gets you so far. And so you still need people and process and policies around it, especially when you're dealing with the consumer and how regulated that the servicing side is.
Yeah, it is so regulated. It's where all the 80% of CFPB complaints come in on the servicing side of the business. And it's really, that's why you look at, you're trying to get a Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, or Jenny Mae approvals. Mark can tell you, they're not going to approve you unless you have someone on staff. That's why a lot of people are struggling and say, yeah, I want to get my agency approval on a servicing retained basis, but I can't find anybody that lives in our, even within 100 miles of me that have any experience. So we got to have them remote. So, Mark, there's going to be a lot of people going to be paying attention to that segment when you offer it up. So thank you so much for being here, friend. Appreciate it. It's good to have this group. We've got some of the best folks here on this podcast, and we're just so honored to have you as our listener here each and every week. I encourage you to share this podcast with others. Again, averaging nearly 4,000 downloads of this podcast, probably up over that right now, what's going on. So we appreciate you. I want to say also a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, Form Free Lender Toolkit, SnapDocs, Total Expert, Simple Nexus, the MBA, what they do for us. Thank you, MBA, everyone there. Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative Success Kit, Knowledge Coop, Mobility MMI, Modex, Mortgage Advisory Tools, as well as DW Consulting. Folks, thank you so much for being here. It's always a joy to come to you each and every week and tell others about it. Continue to increase our downloads. We're here really, we're not about the downloads, although it's encouraging because we're obviously reaching people. We're more encouraged because we're offering substance, and your feedback about the quality of the podcast is really appreciated. Have a great week, everybody, and look forward to having you back here next week.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.